Hello and welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP, a John Paz from the two-man power trip of wrestling. Of course, joining me is the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, the former NWA Florida World Heavyweight Champion. He is, of course, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, JP. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Today's show is Bash at the Beach 1995, and that was held on July 16th in Huntington Beach, California, at the beach, literally. The attendance, 9,500 people. The tagline, an event so hot, they had to put it on the beach. The pay-per-view buys were 180,000. What do you think about that? About 10,000 people on the beach. Were they charging for tickets? Was it a free event? Like, how did you kind of manage that? Because pretty crazy to get that many people, but were they all paying customers?
I'm pretty sure they were paying customers. There might have been a couple of complimentaries. But if we didn't have paying customers, the way it was laid out, you could see the matches without having a ticket. So it was a smart way to do it, I think. We didn't make money off the house, and that we knew we wouldn't. But the kids got to see the wrestling, so it was good.
Why didn't you want to make money off the house? I mean, obviously the pay-per-view, 180,000 is great and stuff, but don't you want to make some money off the house, or was it about the ambiance and the look and the feel? I mean, what was the thought process?
The ambiance, the look and the feel. I mean, where are you going to go? You don't see the beach. You don't see the water. They set the commentators up directly away from the water. It was done really, really nice because it was spring break. There are places still cold, and you get to see that, and you say, wow, that looks really nice.
Pretty cool, though, just to set it up for the fact that it's on the beach. Just looked awesome when you ordered it on paper. You're like, wow, you never seen anything like that before. Only WCW would kind of do that. WWF didn't do too many of those kind of cool, like obviously Hog Wild and stuff. But I guess the complaint would be, hey, you should be able to make more money on the house. Not that that's the end-all be-all, but you want to make some money off selling some tickets and having people be in the quote-unquote arena or wherever you're holding the event.
Yeah, and that goes to show you how different we were. One was a wrestling company. The other was a TV company. The TV company would want something that looked very, very cool. Well, where the wrestling company needs to sell tickets.
With this pay-per-view, you replaced Ric Flair as the booker. How did that happen?
Hogan came up to me and said, can you do this? I said, yeah, and that's all it took.
The headliner, Hogan versus Vader in the cage, then Savage Flair is the other co-main event and in the lifeguard match, a.k.a. the lumberjack match. Going into this show, were you having any sort of backstage problems with Randy, Flair, Vader, or Hogan?
No. The atmosphere was very loose. Most pay-per-views were very tight, but this was loose. We were at the beach. The guys had gotten there a couple of days before. It was a whole different thing.
Was Baywatch shot around this time period as well? Is that why you guys were out there?
Yeah, it was shot a couple of months prior to this.
And you were mentioning Hogan had a piece of Baywatch, or I guess a part of the production with the syndication and making a little side money off of Baywatch, which was, at that time, the number one syndicated show.
Right. And during that time, I had flown out to some. He did a movie with Lonnie Anderson in Denver. It was The Karate Kids. I believe that he was a strong man. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah. It was Three Ninjas.
That's it. So he was working a lot of movies at the time.
Did you guys like that or not like that as far as him not having WCW be the main focus? Or you knew that going in?
I think we knew it going in. And that was part of the deal when he signed that they would put Thunder in Paradise on. He wanted to be a movie star.
What did you think about his acting ability? What did you think about Hulkster's movies?
This is a no knock. I'm sure he's a pretty fair actor, but they made him play Hulk Hogan in every role, or a variation of Hulk Hogan. Do you think that he could have played a gay limousine driver like The Rock did?
No.
Could he have done No Pain, No Gain with Mark Wahlberg, where he was a murderer?
Right, no.
So he was buttonholed into a lot of parts that he couldn't do.
So yeah. For this pay-per-view, we'll just do the three matches of the main event first that happened as the pre-show. Sergeant Craig Pitbull Pittman defeated Chris Kanyon in 2 minutes. Road Warrior Hawk defeated one of your favorites, Mark Starr, in about a minute 25. And then Dirty Dick Slater and Bunkhouse Buck with Colonel Robert Parker defeated Marcus Alexander Bagwell and Alex Wright in about 3 minutes and 30 seconds. After the match, Big Van Vader comes out and attacks and beats up Bagwell and Alex Wright, which kind of sets it up later for the main event, which involves the Hulkster. But interesting thing here is you had Vader beating up Wright and Bagwell on the pre-show after the match. Was this just to make Vader look like a monstrous heel?
Yes, yes. At that time, we were trying to make Vader the center point of all the heels.
And that ends the pre-show. Then the opening match of the pay-per-view starts off with the Stinger. Sting versus Ming with Colonel Robert Parker for the United States Championship. Sting wins the match in a good match. It goes about 15 minutes. The Stinger was able to roll up Ming for the victory here. What do you think here? Sting and Ming.
Sting, you want the lead homegrown WCW guy to open up the show against the toughest guy in the world, and they could have great matches. And they did have good matches.
Like the chemistry with these guys. Sting, very underrated. He could really work with anybody. They say, oh, he's not a great wrestler. I don't know about that. In the context of what you need him to be and what you need out of him, he's great, and he could have a good match with everybody.
I believe so, too. He just knew how to get the most out of his performance with the right guys. He knew to solve for Ming. He knew when to make a comeback. He knew when to get cut off. He was very, very good.
Now, he only wins with a roll-up. Then after the match, Ming attacks Sting and Road Warrior Hawk runs down and makes the save. Are you trying to keep Ming strong here?
It wasn't just that we had the Road Warrior Animal coming down because brothers in paint.
When Ming loses here, are you thinking already you want to put him in the Dungeon of Doom? Because eventually he's going to work his way towards the dungeon. Is that a part of your thought process as well?
I knew that a lot of the higher management didn't see what I saw in him. And I knew if I kept him in a position of low key, that they didn't see him around a lot, that he wasn't being pushed, I could keep him paid. Not that he needed it, because he was a hell of a hand. But for some reason, a lot of people didn't see the ability that I saw in him.
Oh, he's great. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, the next matchup features Paul Orndorff. The Renegade, who is the television champion with Jimmy Hart, defeats Paul Orndorff in about 6 minutes here, successfully defending his television title. What do you think here? Are you really trying to get, I guess, Renegade over? He's beaten Arn one show. He's beaten Paul Orndorff. I mean, oof, this Renegade guy, this Ultimate Warrior light, he's beaten all these legends.
I was not happy with it. Paul expressed his own views as he wasn't happy with it. And it expressed his own views. He wasn't happy with it. If he couldn't get the Warrior, he was going to get the win back somehow.
If you go to the finish, Orndorff gets his shoulder up.
And the ref clearly is out of position to not see it. So it almost seems like, okay, we're keeping Orndorff strong here or keeping him happy, one or the other.
He's smart enough to keep himself happy. And I didn't say a word because I didn't blame Paul.
It's interesting because it did make Orndorff look like he lost and almost made Renegade not look weak, but it was like, oh, you didn't really win that one.
Right, right. One thing about Paul, he would speak his mind. And he'd tell you it sucked. But he would go out and do it. So I never, ever questioned him. Now, somebody else might, but I certainly didn't. Because I didn't think it was fair. You know, we're doing it just in case the Ultimate Warrior didn't come so he could get a win back.
Was that the end goal, though? Build up Renegade, make him a main eventer, and then have Hogan beat him?
Yeah, yeah. Why else would he be there? Didn't we try to make him look like the Ultimate Warrior? We have the Ultimate Surprise.
Interesting. If you think about it, very interesting with Renegade. And he was just put in a spot I don't think he was ready for either. You know what I mean? He was very green.
He was a wonderful human being. He ended up committing suicide. I wonder if that had something to do with it, the pressure.
For sure. The next matchup, Kamala with the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, yourself, defeats Hacksaw Jim Duggan in about 6 minutes. The Zodiac runs in and hits Duggan with Kamala's mask to give Kamala the big pay-per-view victory here. What are the thoughts here? Build up the dungeon?
No, Hulk liked his friends, and I was trying to put them all in one spot. Try to put them all in one spot to turn him heel, but Kamala was a great attraction for a long time.
Yeah, if you go back to 86, 87, too, when Hogan had a bunch of big-time house show feuds, again, Kamala was one of the guys that he sold out a bunch of venues to, and Hogan gave him credit, which Hulk does a lot. He always says, oh, remember we were talking Beefcake? Oh, Beefcake helps. Well, Hogan, everybody sold out with you. But no, he gave Kamala a lot of credit. So Kamala helped him sell out a lot of shows.
Yes, he did. And Hulk has a long memory and doesn't forget.
Do you do anything with contracts as far as money and stuff? Because Kamala at this point was complaining that, oh, I wasn't working under a contract. They were paying me a certain amount of money. Do you have anything to do with that or no?
No, I had nothing to do with contracts. I was way above my pay grade.
Gotcha. The next matchup, Diamond Dallas Page with the beautiful Diamond Doll and Max Muscle defeat Dave Sullivan in about 4 minutes. This feud, I can't believe it's still going on for months.
Yeah, yeah. Page was writing notes after notes, and he was the hottest working man in the show business. He got himself over.
Big time. And in this match, Max Muscle kind of tries to cheat. The referee gets distracted. Dave Sullivan turns around. Diamond Cutter, and we have a finish. Do you think you need a little bit of hoopla for DDP to get a win here, or is that cut par for the course? Make sure you cement that he's the heel.
I think it's par for the course of Page's finishes. He was a very dear friend of Eric's, and we were all told that he was going to get pushed. So I wasn't going to squabble over something so minute as that kind of finish.
Did you think, like, hey, he's a neighbor of Eric's, he's getting a push, is a good thing or a bad thing? Yes, Bischoff believes in him, he's trusting him, he's his friend, or is he too close to him that maybe he shouldn't? But you're saying he's a hard worker, he deserves it, but is that almost bad to be friendly with the boss?
Well, it worked for him, so I can't say it doesn't work. And Paige worked hard, so I can't knock Paige for that at all.
Does that get him any heat in the back?
Yes, a lot.
What are they saying to you?
Why him? If it wasn't for somebody pushing him. And I'm not going to sit and explain to them why. I'm saying because he's a hardworking guy. And he was.
No doubt about it. The next matchup, Harlem Heat, Booker T and Stevie Ray with Sister Sherry, who are the tag champs, defend their titles against the Nasty Boys, Knobs and Sags, and the Blue Bloods of Lord Steven Regal and Earl Robert Eaton in a triple threat match for the WWE tag team titles. Harlem Heat gets the win in about 13 minutes, but a very clever finish here as Sags stacks them up together. So you have Booker T on top of Regal, and Sags pins him 1-2-3. He thinks he won. Well, guess what? Booker T is technically on top of Regal, who has his shoulders down. So Harlem Heat get the victory. Whose finish is that?
I think it was mine. I might have kicked it around with those guys. And I don't try to take credit of a bunch of stuff, but I had to make sense out of that match.
What was the thought process? You wanted Harlem Heat to get the heel-like victory, but keep the Nasty Boys looking strong?
Right, right. Because I was giving them every one of our top tag teams, and I couldn't afford to lose any momentum off any of them. Now they look back at it, somebody at that time could have lost.
Pretty clever, just if you think about it, though, because the fans thought the Nasty Boys won. Everyone thought, and then until they make the announcement, no, the winners and still champions, the Harlem Heat. And I was like, oh, that's right. Like, I remember watching as a kid, like, that's right. Booker T didn't have his shoulders in the ground, even though he stacked them. He wasn't down. It was just a smart thing, and it made them look like, wow, Booker T outsmarted them there, but the Nasty Boys still kicked both the other team's ass.
Right, right.
So the double main event, Randy Macho Man Savage ends up defeating a Ric Flair in a lifeguard match in 14 minutes, a lifeguard match, which is very similar to the lumberjack match.
Randy and Rick could have worked in a phone booth and made it work. They were fabulous.
The quote unquote lifeguards, DDP, Booker T, Stevie Ray, Max Muscle, Dave Sullivan, Arn Anderson, Johnny B. Badd, Dick Slater, Bunkhouse Buck, Chris Canyon, Jim Duggan, Brian Knobbs, Jerry Sags, and Mark Starr. Arn tries to interfere here, but still Macho Man gets the victory. Any problem from Nate taking the loss to Savage?
No, no. They get along very well.
They had a feud back in 1992 in the World Wrestling Federation as well, and they had a very, very long feud here. There was no backstage heat with them. You always hear stories, well, whether it be from the Harlem Heat have said it, or that like Savage and Flair are always kind of unsure of each other. If somebody's trying to one-up, or is that just part of the game?
That was part of their game, but they had a common enemy, so it drew them together.
Good match here, of course. It's like you said, they always had a good chemistry. Always these two seem to draw very, very well.
They were like Sting and Flair. They drew very well.
So the main event of the evening, the Hulkster defending his WWE Heavyweight Championship in the cage against Big Van Vader. Hulkster with Jimmy Hart gets the victory by escaping the cage in about 13 minutes and 20 seconds. What do you think here? Escape the cage rules?
I hate the escape cage. It's in the cage to keep you in. If that's the rule, how stupid is that for a finish?
That's more of a WWF thing, which is interesting. WCW started doing it here with the escape the cage stuff, because WCW was always an NWA, was to keep it in the cage, the blow off the feud usually, but the winner is going to win it in the cage and end it.
Right, right. I hated it. Hated it. It was stupid.
The escape the cage, was that almost good for Vader, though? Because he doesn't really lose because the guy escaped.
I still don't like it. I mean, the baby face ran away.
Did Vader want to win?
Absolutely, he wanted to win. He thought he was told he was going to win.
You're booking, right? I mean, who tells him he's going to win?
Who tells him he's going to win? He's saying he should win, and people are saying, oh, yeah, you're going to win. He was going on a horse's ass instead of the horse's head.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. Was he pissed that he had to lose here?
No, but he certainly would have been a lot happier if he won.
A lot of other stuff going on around the cage match, too. I mean, Hogan gets the win, but during the match, Zodiac interferes, you interfere, Dennis Rodman is out there with a steel chair. As Vader's trying to escape, Hogan knocks him down. Following the match, Flair and Arn come out to confront Vader for not getting the job done. And then Vader ends up challenging both of them. So is this, like, basically you want to turn Vader babyface?
It's all camouflage. It's appeasement at its worst.
It's interesting here, though, because you would think Hogan would want the big win against the big monster in the cage, not by escaping it, but you know what I mean? Just by beating him.
Yeah, but he was used to climbing out of the cage in WWF and didn't want to change it.
I never thought escaping the cage is like a huge victory. I mean, yes, you get the win, but it's like, he didn't really put the stamp on it. He didn't really kill him. You know, he didn't really slay that dragon. But is it a thought process of yours? Like Vader's going to be a top face somehow?
I go back to that time where Piper and Hogan were in that tag match. And they drew, and they only did it twice. You could have done it occasionally and drawn big money with it. Because eventually you knew he was going to turn on Hogan. And people paid to go see what night it was going to be. That was my only concern on that.
So what do you think overall of the pay-per-view? Thumbs up, thumbs down, in the middle?
It's the big beach. I mean, it was a great atmosphere. A lot of great explosion in it. Yeah, I'd give a thumbs up.
Very cool atmosphere at the beach. I love it when it's away from the arena and you get something different because aesthetically it just looks cool as hell.
Yeah, yeah.
So just also to mention, this is the last pay-per-view before the golden era of the Monday Night Wars. So you have Clash of Champions next, and then the Fall Brawl would be part of the Nitro era, which Nitro started on September 4th, 1995. Just an interesting note, it's kind of the last pay-per-view of that era.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I will give this a slight thumbs up as well as we head into the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. And, of course, prowrestlingtees.com. Go to the Kevin Sullivan store. You can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else you got going on?
Well, I just got back from Florida. They reopened Championship Wrestling from Florida Reloaded in the 24th. Of this month, I'm going to Lubbock, Texas for SWE Fury. It's a meet and greet, and I hope to see some of our friends there.
All right. Nice. Good stuff, as always, in Texas and a little CWF in Florida as well. Very, very cool. But thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you right back here next week for Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. See you next week, folks.